National Radio Hub.
IDXers, Happy New Year, and welcome to Market Scope, your monthly air check segment of the DX Audio Service. We're back in the air check library again, dusting off old tapes and playing them for you.
95.5 FM, it's a minute until 3 o'clock. There's just a couple of things I want to take care of here before we get to... Five FM, WCLY, Classy 95. Bye! Bye. Toodaloo! Well, that's it. Bye!
Ready, guys?
Yep.
Yeah.
This is Benjamin Hill, general manager of this radio station. A couple of years ago, the then management of what was then one of America's premier radio stations made the decision to change and become a yuppie station. It was a horrible mistake. Today, something that seldom happens in business is happening. We've decided to undo the mistake. So may I be the first person to say it? It's 3 o'clock at Washington's WPGC, Morningside, Maryland.
Are you absolutely sure? Look, don't do this to me now. Are you really sure?
C 95.5 FM. WPGC.
In the world's most important city. And this is Mike Beach on the world's most important radio station. It's a true pleasure to say the new WPGC 95.
See. Is it really necessary for me to go out of the room just because you want to undress?
The new WPGC 95 with the first major happening on FM. WPGC, we're going to have it on Monday for you. You're going to love it.
Mattress Discounters presents more uses of the mattress.
Wild World. Bigger, better, wilder, and wetter.
Starting May 23rd, Wild World open daily at 10 a.m.
The new WPGC. This is Mike Beach. You've got my number, 432-9595, and I've got your music. Here's Lisa.
WSAI.
Dick Biondi at 809, 48 degrees. And I guess all those guys that sit around the taverns guzzling down beers, they should know the answer. The last name of George Lee. Very famous in this town. Good morning. This is Dick Biondi. 813, 48 degrees, a little bit of rain all over the area, and I'm very proud to say that we finally got a correct answer. A dentist in Madeira by the name of Mike Shane, who used to live in Chicago, and he called up and he said that he knew the famous person in Cincinnati whose first two names were George Lee. And we must have had about 40 calls. Nobody, until Mike called, knew who George Lee Anderson was, better known as Sparky Anderson, manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Well, I'll tell you now, Mr. Zimmerman down there at the Temple Delicatessen, 130 West 7th today.
Where the night-ended orgy of the living dead begins.
And Starlight Drive-In starts Sunday at the State Cinema.
WSAI. Well, I want to wish good luck to Cindy Janik, J-O-E-N-H-N-K, down at Riverfront trying to get opening day tickets. Lots of luck. Good morning. Dick Biondi, 827, 48 degrees. I want to say hello to Mike Goodman, who works in the advertising department of Procter & Gamble. He called up a little while ago and he said, I know the answer to that question. This was after it was all over. He was, you know, missed it. He got out of his car to go to work. He said, the answer is George Lee Wiedemann. Huh? Sorry, Mike. I mean, he works over there at P&G. Funny thing, though, I told him about, you know, how Procter & Gamble should come out with a toothpaste with a meat flavor, so at least most of us today with the prices can have something that reminds us of meat three or four times a day when we brush our teeth.
Your eyes.
Denton Starlight Drive-Ins.
Dealer or store. Right now.
Degrees. Dick Biondi here. Somebody called up and said, listen, that dentist out there in Madeira that identified Sparky Anderson's first two names of George Lee, what did he win? Well, we didn't offer any prize. He asked the same thing, but he did really win because I don't have a dentist as yet, and now I do. And he's going to go out there and take a look into my mouth, which is a pretty dangerous thing to do.
The music machine. WXLW.
3:51 with Silver Shirk. I love Donny Oz, but I tell you, I got his pictures up all over my house.
Well, actually, I just have him in the bathroom.
Excuse me. I have to go use the Donny one time now.
You ask how much I need you.
That's a long, long time ago.
Machine, WXLW.
3:55 with Super Shrek and Super XL, 20 minutes of non-stop music. Less commercials, 5:15 tonight, 2 hours of non-stop music. It is Johnny Nash.
Steer it up, steer it up.
The music machine,
WXLW.
3:57 with Super Shrek and XL Radio, 2 hours of non-stop music, 5:15 tonight. We're in the midst of 20. And right now we got the sound of dawn and tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree.
I'm coming home, I've done my time.
WXLW, Indianapolis, is the Mid-America Music Machine.
The time at the tone, 4 o'clock at Super XL.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Smokey Robinson, America, a little bit of Care of a Clown type action for you there. It's 4:03 in a Super Shrek and Super XL Radio. You've heard yourself 20 minutes of non-stop music, proving that Super XL does play less commercials.
Super Shrek.
The Uncontest, coming soon to Super XL. The explosive world of stock car racing lives again this Friday night at Indianapolis Raceway Park. The Racers Track. The Music Machine.
The Music Machine.
The Music Machine.
WXLW.
You are only 20 minutes away from the most fantastic
in the record departments at all four Indianapolis Kmart stores.
Wednesday weather.
Well, looks something like it's going to be rain tonight. Rain ending with partial clearing on tap for tomorrow. Lows tonight 55. Highs tomorrow 72. And currently within the sounds of my gold. It is 65 degrees at XL, reminding you, do you have clothing your children have outgrown? Well, the Volunteers of America are in dire need of clothing for less fortunate boys and girls. Call the Volunteers of America at 635-4545.
Who we got here?
Super Shirt.
I know him.
Superstar.
He's Super XL. You know, I'm so in love with this radio station. I don't know whether to sit down and listen to it or take it to a motel and check it in. These are the Carpenters. What do you say? Let's sing.
When you tune up the radio dial to most of the so-called radio stations in this area, chances are you don't hear music. What you probably hear is some rude, crude, and socially unacceptable contest. Surprise Package 1310 is your own two-tower, 50,000-watt directional radio station, complete with 21 current records, 400 oldies, and one jingle. License not included. License not included. Isn't it about time somebody did something to clear the air of this radio pollution? Super XL meets the challenge of these contest creeps who try to buy off their audiences. Be listening as we lower the boom with the Uncontest. Can you be bought, or are you your own person? The Uncontest, coming soon to Super XL.
WXLW.
And a hit. Just keep on coming on the J.J. Jeffrey Show.
WRKO, Boston.
AM and FM 331. And now, radio. Buckingham's working out all their cylinders. And hey, baby, 334 WRKO, heavy happening time on the J.J. Jeffrey Show. Let us peer into the future now with our friend the Ouija.
Will the Ouija talking board set answer your questions? Find out. Join the Wild Question Fun crowd. Get Ouija by Parker Brothers, makers of world-famous Monopoly.
Now, radio. WRKO.
Playing what you're saying on the hit line at 262-1630. We are working diligently, because that's how we always do it here at 68, as you know. You know you are taking in a great gas station this afternoon, 68. Take care of requests from Watertown, from Dunnofern, and there is...
Look up on my garden gates, that's name, that's what no mountain...
Arriba, arriba, fiesta time, right there at your knob at 337 WRKO. Heavy happening time on the J.J. Jeffrey Show. What do you know? Here's the hand, the Midas Man.
When you can hear your mother, see your Midas Man.
We'll give you the most for your money. That's Midas. Square and proud of it.
Anyone who calls himself Dan the Midas Man is definitely a square. Seven shops in this area. One in Cambridge, 2501 Mass Ave, where you get expert foreign car service. Coast to coast, over 475 shops. It's Midas Papa.
Now, radio is treating Boston to a psychedelic scene at our WRKO happening, Sac Savoy Theater, Thursday, September 21st at 8:30 p.m. We're having the music of the heaviest group of the hub, MGM's Velvet Underground, clothes from paraphernalia lighting up the evening, and a wild light and slide show. All of this will be capped by a special showing of the camp crime flick, Anthony Quinn in the Happening. 2,500 people will be our guests, and you'll need a special WRKO ticket for admission. Also, you could win a slide projector and camera by Kodak. The WRKO jocks are giving away one a day. Qualifiers are announced hourly, and the daily winner is named on the Chuck Knapp Show between 9 and 10 p.m. So send your card to Happening WRKO Boston, and be where it's at the Now Radio Happening.
WRKO.
Come back when you grow up, girl. Come back.
It's 20 minutes before 4. This is Alan Bickley, WRKO 2022. This is Alan Bickley.
68 WRKO.
Let love
come between us. Hit pound, cheers, watch it soar. Into our now 30, up and up and up. 3:48 WRKO, making it happen time on the J.J. Jeffrey Show. Here, something for you to ponder over. A question. If you haven't decided what to do about your future, how'd you like to get into a career field that will double and double again in the next 5 years? How'd you like to get in on the ground floor of something new with the opportunity to grow and go as high as your ambitions will take you? Well, the field I'm talking about is IBM Data Processing and Computer Programming. This vital new field is in great need of trained young men and women, and the need gets greater every day. But you must be well-trained. To get this training, contact Andover Institute of Business, New England's leading school for IBM training. Andover Institute is located at 660 Beacon Street, Boston, with other campuses in Andover, Brockton, Lynn, Springfield, Worcester, and Portland, Maine. But the time is short. Fall term day and evening classes start this month. Get complete information. Call or write Andover Institute of Business, 660 Beacon Street, Boston, or the campus nearest you. Or if you wish, you can write to Andover, WRKO, Boston, Mass.
Now radio, WRKO.
We'll bend your mind and stretch your senses on Thursday, September 21st at our Happening. Be there. Rush a card to Happening. WRKO, Boston. And a song to make you suffer from Mitch Ryder.
In a deep and dark December.
And the hits just keep on coming on the J.J. Jeffrey Show.
WRKO, Boston.
AM and FM, 4 p.m. at now, radio.
From Jackie Wilson on the side of 905 WRKO, making it happen time on the Chuck Knapp Show.
We are at the scene of a commotion here in Van Buren Park. Ladies and gentlemen, the pigeons, furious about being denied their Jack's cheese twists, have lifted Marvin Dooley off the ground and are carrying him away. We'll try to keep you informed of the outcome.
Shop BPM Supermarkets, where you can be certain you're getting quality products at the lowest possible prices. Save on penny power pricing at BPM Supermarkets.
68 WRKO.
Hey, baby, here is today's winner of the WRKO Happening Light Show outfit containing a Kodak camera, slide projector. Congratulations to Dick O'Brien of Newburyport, Massachusetts. We'll be sending you, Dick, the camera and the projector, along with a couple of tickets for the WRKO Happening. Be eligible to win. Send a card to Happening WRKO in Boston. Listen to your name. Dick O'Brien of Newburyport, Mass. is the winner today. WRKO, heavy heaven and time on a Chuck Knapp Show.
Here's the Younger Society for University Seal.
And I'm not giving him up to anybody.
All right, hey, fella, you say no matter what you try, the gals never squeal like that for you? You need a handsome University Seal sports coat. The new double-breasted models are flying high this year, plus a great collection of 2- and 3-button single-breasted beauties. They've got them all the great patterns and fabrics. Fly on down to Almy's and Revere, insane to Burlington, Danvers, and Dorchester. Good deal, darn right, because it's by University Seal. So you know that it's for real, baby.
WRKO weather.
58 degrees, low tonight in the low 40s, high tomorrow, low 70s. Clear skies, warmer at midweek with 58. A reminder from the WRKO jocks that the Mass Division of Motorboats warns all those going to Newport for the Cup races to be sure to register all motorboats regardless of horsepower.
WRKO hit the...
There you go, DXers. I hope you enjoyed this month's travel back in time to hear a format change to some high-energy Top 40. Do you have interesting radio in your town? Why not record it and send it in? I'm Phil Wayne, and my address is 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. Or you can always send it in to Fred at the DX Audio Service headquarters. Wishing you and your families a happy new year, we now go to the musings from the members.
The DX Audio Service musings from members.
This is Rusty Curry in Eugene, Oregon. Regarding the battery article, when did the 9-volt batteries come along? Also, I was reading Fast Popcoms that about the first transistor radio that came out in 54. It was saying that that had a 22.5-volt battery. And I was thinking, wow, I don't think I'd want to tongue test that one the way that we used to do 9 volts. But I wonder how that was shaped, whether it was the same shape as the 9 volts, maybe bigger. It would also be nice to find one of those 9-volt alternators, but I don't know where I would buy one. Because I have an antenna that takes 9 volts, but I never seem to have one that's well charged anyway. That's all from here, thanks. 73s, everyone.
Hello, this is Fred Moe from New Hampshire. Thanks to a nor'easter, we had a Thanksgiving weekend without electricity, and I was able to listen to shortwave with some fantastic reception. I just wanted to report to the National Radio Club membership that there is a new shortwave station broadcasting 24 hours a day on 9395 kilohertz. It's called Global 24, and I was able to receive it here in New Hampshire crystal clear over Thanksgiving weekend. They had a variety of programs, including jazz, classical music, some news and informational type programs, and a lot of programs from PJ Media, like Media Matters Plus and the Happy Station Show. Just a fantastic shortwave radio listening experience. That's Global 24, 9395 kilohertz.
Greetings, DX Audio Service members. This is Terry Livingston Hughes in Winnetka, California. I notice sometimes I say Los Angeles. Winnetka is a little subsection of Los Angeles. Several things to mention. I have my notes in front of me, so I hope I don't forget anything. I am calling on the evening of December 1st. I received my 1.5 months of DX Audio Service, 3 CDs on Saturday. And thanks to all the editors and all the readers, again, such well-selected materials read to us, everything from the interview with Professor Terkel to the story about the Magliazzi brothers. All of those stories, excellently chosen. Thank you for sharing them with us. I had one thing I'd like to be considered the next time there is a long list of silent stations. Please consider including the city of license as well as the call letters and frequencies, because I found with some of the call letters mentioned or some of the frequencies mentioned, I wanted to know where that was located, having been familiar with the letters on FM or wondering if I knew that frequency with some other letter combination in its past life. It's wonderful having such a long DX audio service. I know the editors take out so many hours every week from their lives to help us out, and I hope this doesn't increase the workload too much. I wanted to know what methods of recording Mr. Wayne might find most useful for the market scope. So if you could discuss that on some issue, that would be handy. Also, I notice a lot of air checks from the late 50s until more recent times. Are there any that anyone here maintains that could be broadcast on market scope that are from earlier points in time? My grandmother and mother always listened to KFWB from the late 50s on, at least, before I started school, so that's so this late 50s, early 60s rock and roll stations are things I'm very familiar with. KHJ 930 is now Immaculate Heart Radio, and I am having more difficulty receiving the station since it no longer broadcasts from its historic location. The transmitter was removed from there 2 years ago. But I'm having more trouble now since the station changed formats. Before it was ranchera music, and I don't think it's just the change in format. I wonder if there's some other change in the transmitter or the transmission pattern recently which might account for my increasing difficulty receiving the station. I cannot receive KBRT 740 Costa Mesa any longer, since their transmitter was moved from Avalon out on Catalina Island to Corona, and I have now talked out my limit. Thank you all for being so patient and listening to me through all of this. 73 and good DX.
This is Tim Hendel. I would like to address this question only to those who've actually worked in the broadcast industry. Why do so many radio stations not want to identify themselves? They bury their ID or skip it altogether. Wouldn't it be like me going to a party and refusing to tell people my name? It seems to me that the ID is the only thing that is absolutely unique about you as a radio station. Anybody can be News Talk 950 or Power 103 or Country 97. But if I say, this is WSM 650, Nashville, Tennessee, or this is KFI 640 Los Angeles. No other radio station can make that claim. Even a little 1,000-watt radio station on a so-called graveyard channel, WBTA, 1490, Batavia, New York. There's no other station in the whole country that can make that claim. So why do stations hide their IDs? I would think it would be something they would boast about.
Hello, Fred. I'm going to be fast on this idea. This has to do with the fact that how do you send money over to, I listened to that wonderful DX test from Brandon Jordan, and I didn't know how do you send money to him so he can buy stamps, because those are some wonderful tests if he can get more stamps, as you say, but I didn't know how to actually do that. I was wondering if you could get back in contact with me and let me know about how do I send something to him so he can continue these wonderful tests. 718-433-K711. Thank you.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri. Happy 2015 to everybody. I was very interested in the wonderful December DX audio service. A lot of great stuff in there. First, an interesting DX catch back on November 25th, shortly after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. For several minutes, I was listening to a pretty good signal from 1330 WEBY from Milton, Florida, and that's in the northwest part of Florida, apparently near Pensacola, and according to Wikipedia, they have 25,000 watts. I would have guessed they had twice that much. I was very interested in the story about WIFE-FM going off the air. I lived 50 miles away from Omaha, and I was trying to stay awake the night that KOIL went off the air, but unfortunately I fell asleep. I understand that the last song they played was The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel. They came back on the air on December 16th of 1976, about 3 months after they went off the air, and I was in school at the time that the station came on the air, so I missed their sign-on. But anyway, also something very interesting about the market scope. The air check of WCAU-FM caught my attention because we lived about 40 miles from Philadelphia in the mid-80s for a while. And I wonder if anybody else noticed what I noticed. It sure seems to me like Mike Fraser on that air check sounds an awfully lot like Glenn Beck. Things that make you go, hmm.
This is Mike Lance in Aventura, Florida. There is a radio station in Philadelphia, which is a sports station on 610. Their core letters are WIP. WIP is dropping their core letters, and they're going to become WTEL. WTEL used to be in Philadelphia on 860, and the new set of core letters on 610, WTEL, will be a time-brokered radio station. I think that it's sad that radio stations are dropping the three-letter cores because it's historic and it's something big within the radio market. Thank you very much and have a great day.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. This is Mike Dukin calling from Hayward, Wisconsin, and I trust that by the time we all receive this in January that everybody will have had a most joyous holiday season. And the best to everybody in the upcoming new year. Now, some of my comments are kind of late than never, but here they are. Geez, I want to thank Mark Durenberger for the wonderful report on the state of the station, reports on the history of Twin Cities Radio. I'd say a great deal of it, I'd say 80 or 90% of a lot of these things I remember, and I have great memories of a lot of that stuff. There are also some things that I didn't know about, like the history of the 1400 spot. And Mark, that was really fantastic. But it poses a question that I have. Who was the attorney that moonlighted as a disc jockey on WWTC? Who was that fella? And be curious to know the answer of that, who that was. Now, I have a format flip to report from that particular area. I guess this happened around December the 1st. WIXK 1590 on the dial from New Richmond, Wisconsin, which is across the border from St. Paul, I believe. It's also considered in the Eastern Metro half of the Twin Cities. I didn't know that. Well, that station, WIXK, was sold to a company called Hmong Broadcasting Incorporated, And on December the 1st, they made a flip to, they're playing Asian music. I don't know if there's any announcing because I can't get them here. But they're playing Asian music. They were running a country format for decades. It's a little sad because at one time, the station was kind of an informational voice for that particular county and surrounding counties like Pierce County and the areas around River Falls, Wisconsin. So anyway, that's all I have to report for now. And I'll just simply say 73s and good DX.
Hello, everyone. My name is Charlie. I'm from Perrysburg, Ohio. Hey, I'm a longtime member, but a first-time caller. My subject are annual conventions. First of all, I hope they resume soon, and I'd like to see them happen every year again, if possible. My question is, if annual conventions do resume, is it possible to hold them in a month other than September? For instance, it'd be a lot easier for me if they were held in August or October. In my case, I'd be able to attend a lot more readily if they were not held in September around Labor Day. Then the other topic is, if annual conventions do resume, would it be possible to let everyone know the plans, like during November or December the previous year, so they can schedule the proper time off work or off of school or what have you, in order to make travel plans to attend a convention? Okay, well, thanks a lot, everyone, and I'll be interested to hear what anyone has to say. Bye-bye.
Greetings, DX Audio Service members. This is Terry Livingston Hughes in Winnetka, California. I know, it's a part of Los Angeles. Okay, now that we've got the geography out of the way, let's talk about another way to access the geography. I am the owner of a SkyWave radio from Sea Crane Company. I received mine on the 5th of December. It's now the 16th. This radio sells for $89. I recommend this radio. It has quite acceptable AM and shortwave bands, shortwave going from, I believe, 2300 kilohertz to 26,100 megahertz. It's very good coverage of the shortwave band for a program listener. There is no single sideband capability with this radio. The wonderful point about this radio is the excellent, really exceptional FM band. So if you like a radio for listening on the go, this measures approximately 3 by 5 by 1.5 inches. I would suggest this radio. It's got a very good speaker. And, of course, excellent listening with earphones as well. So, if there is a radio in your future and Santa did not bring you one, consider SkyWave. This is not an ad. It's just a review. 73 and good DX.
Hi, Kevin McGill calling from Madison, Wisconsin. It's Thursday, December 18th. Responding to the article on Tom Magliozzi, I personally never got into car talk. I thought it was kind of stupid, but I can sure appreciate who they were. And the article itself was quite interesting. I didn't realize that the brothers were that close. I knew they were brothers, but I didn't realize they were that close. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Let's get right to answers because we don't have much time left. First of all, on the batteries. Boy, did we get a lot of people commenting about the batteries. Well, the 22.5-volt battery was predominantly used in tube receivers. And the earliest detection I can find of that battery was back in 1937. And it lasted well into the 50s. In fact, it was used in some transistor radios for a short period of time. But as you might guess, having such a big battery in a transistor radio was a little foolish. So that's why in 1956, the Eveready Battery Company came out with the PP3. That's Papa Papa 3. And apparently people couldn't remember PP3, so that's why we all call it the 9-volt battery. Recording market scopes. Well, the easiest way to record a market scope is with whatever device is the handiest for you. Now, personally, I have used cassette decks and still use the old monophonic Marantz, I think it's PDM-201 cassette decks, and they have a record input on the side of it, and I just connected it up to the earpiece output of a radio and just put a cassette in, usually about 5 minutes before the top of the hour, and just let it record. And then I'll label the tape and with all the pertinent information of the radio station, the date, the personality, etc. But there are some devices out. I saw a few of these at Walmart, the little handheld recorders. And some of the reporters in the news field are using things called a Zoom. And it's a little handheld recorder with amazingly good audio on it. And as long as you have a record input on the side of it, you can make up a little cable to patch between the recorder and the radio and air check to your heart's content. You ask about KHJ. Well, Terry, if you know where Gateway Hospital and Mental Health is located, that's where the towers for KHJ are located, and they're tucked in amongst a ton of buildings, so I can't imagine how they radiate out as well as they do. However, I noticed also in the FCC listings, KHJ is licensed for non-directional day, directional night, but there is a critical hours authorization, which has no data, so I don't know what's going on there. I imagine that once they took down those nice Blonox towers from the old KHJ site, they don't get out as good as they used to. Ernie, I got a problem. I can't seem to get anyone to reply to me in the matters of contributing to the CPC program. I've written to both Brandon Jordan, who's the DX test coordinator, and I've also written to Paul Swearingen, who's the chairman of the National Radio Club. And neither of those gentlemen have returned my email. So I'm not sure what you could do other than maybe perhaps suggest some stations that might be good for tests. If you would like to try writing to Brandon, his email address is swl.tn.usa@gmail.com. And that's our Musings to the Members.
Young Hungarians closer to the world their government censors. Information with a beat.
A délutáni rendezvous műsorán következőnek a Drifters Együttes és On Broadway.
For uncensored news and music, millions of East Europeans switch on Radio Free Europe, the in-sound from outside. For facts about RFE in East Europe, write Radio Free Europe, Box 1971, Mount Vernon, New York.
This item comes from the Broadcast Law Blog by David Oxenford. In a case that has been watched by many AM licenses and debated at a number of broadcast conferences in the last few years, the FCC, on September 19, denied the Tell City waiver, by which the licensee of an AM station in Indiana sought to buy an FM translator in Kentucky and move it to Indiana on a non-adjacent channel and use it to rebroadcast their AM station. This sought to expand the Mattoon waiver, which effectively changed the definition of minor change for an FM translator that could be approved in a single application without waiting for any sort of translator filing window. The current rules define a minor change as one where the translator's 1 microvolt per meter service contour at both current and proposed sites overlap. The Mattoon waiver treated applications as minor changes where the service contours did not overlap, as long as the interfering contour of the translator at one site overlapped with the protective contour of the station at the other site, essentially meaning that a translator could not exist at the current and proposed sites without prohibited interference. The Tell City waiver would have eliminated even that connection between the present and proposed sites for the translator, allowing essentially a move of any FM translator from one place to another and from one frequency to another, regardless of whether the new location had any connection with the original site. The attempt to stretch the definition of a minor change led the Broadcast Commission's Media Bureau to deny the request. The proponents of the Tell City waiver argued that the flexibility to move translators that would be afforded by the grant of the waiver would help support struggling AM stations. The proponents also tried to limit the impact of the proposal by suggesting that it not be allowed in markets where LPFM opportunities were limited. But these arguments did not carry the day. Instead, the FCC said that the proposals would contravene the Ashbacker Doctrine, the precedent that requires the FCC to give all potential mutually exclusive applicants to have an equal opportunity to file for a new frequency,
Stations can be moved to locations where no other party could use the frequency to which station is moving, where the existing operation of a station would preclude the use of the frequency in the new location, as no one else could apply for that frequency because of the existing station. But in areas where a proposed operation did not conflict with any existing station, in effect where a new station could be allotted, the Commission will not reserve it for one party to the exclusion of all others. Here, the existing translator in Kentucky would not preclude the proposed use in Indiana, and the Indiana operation could preclude other new uses of the proposed Indiana frequency. So the Commission felt that Ashbacker prohibited the proposal, as those who might want to use the frequency in the new location would be foreclosed. Moreover, the FCC said that this kind of sweeping change in the translator rules would be better done by rulemaking, and the current proceeding to help revitalize the AM band was a more appropriate way to address the need for FM translators for AM stations. Commissioner Pye, who is an advocate for the quick resolution of the AM proceeding, issued a short statement expressing disappointment with the decision. So in short, the proposal was denied, and AM licensees looking for an FM translator who can't find a local translator for sale will just have to be patient until the AM revitalization rulemaking comes to some sort of resolution, hopefully at some point in the near future. In Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warrow for the DX Audio Service.
The death of radio. Is it time to plan the wake? This story is by Neil Rubin in the Detroit News. Radio is dying, or is it already dead? The precise condition of the body depends on which futurist you read, assuming that you read futurists at all. As for futurist, that's a job title that didn't really exist 15 years ago, just like most of the things that supposedly killed radio. Gordon Burrell, who works in newspapers before he became a media marketing guru, predicted a few weeks ago that half of the existing AM and FM stations would be out of business in a decade. Seth Godin, a marketer, author, entrepreneur, and overall wise person, wrote that radio has been teetering off a cliff for years, and it's about to plummet. The fairly clear inference is that if you're about to launch a career in radio, don't bother signing up for the pension plan. But wait, says Fred Jacobs of Jacobs Media in Bingham Farms, the future doesn't have to kill radio as long as radio looks to its past. And wait, says Dick Kernan of Spex Howard School of Media Arts in Southfield, what about the Weather Channel? Kernan, 76, says he's been hearing about the demise of radio for most of his life, the first time from his dad. In 1956, Kernan says, he landed his first job at what was then WXYZ 1270 and now WXYT AM. Instead of applauding, since Kernan would now be able to take over the payments on his 1946 Mercury, his father followed a brief attaboy with, "Radio is dead. Who wants to listen to the Lone Ranger when you can watch it on television?" Changing with the times. Radio turns out to be an adaptive creature, much like the Lone Ranger himself. Cassette players in cars were supposedly to bump it off, cars being the place where Americans are most likely to tune in. So was Sirius XM. Now the legitimate threats are all the way to customizing and delivering a playlist. iPods, cell phones, Pandora, Spotify, podcasts, downloads, and everything else short of a Macarena band in the back seat. Radio doesn't help itself when it cost cuts to the point of irrelevance. Rounds of layoffs by corporate-owned stations, Jacob says, leaves too many time slots with voices from afar that don't know Taylor from Taylor Swift. So what's the incentive to listen to the music instead of your own? Jacobs is best known for inventing a format, classic rock, that's now more widely heard than regular old rock. His company also consults and creates mobile apps for radio stations. Radio still does many things well, he points out. It's free. It doesn't devour data. Everyone knows how to use it. And you can summon it up from your dashboard even when your house loses power. It's not going away, he says, but it's going to have to redefine what's important to consumers and be that thing. Keeping the focus.
Good radio tells a story, Jacob says. It's not just a playlist, it's a companion. That's how radio operated when stations were locally owned, and that's what is needed to rediscover even as it gets more tightly focused. Kernan's favorite example comes from television. If you'd come into a station 25 years ago pitching an idea for 24 hours of weather, he says, they'd have called security. But the Weather Channel has flourished along with endless others. Meanwhile, the fastest growing radio format is Christian programming, with an audience advertisers can depend on to be loyal. You're going to see a narrower and narrow focus, he predicts. The exceptions, he says, will be programs like Essential Music, weekends from 11 till 2 p.m. on WDET 101.9, built around the widespread tastes and expertise of Ann DeLisi. She gives you a reason to keep listening, Kernan says, unlike a host playing one of those 350 songs approved by some goon in Atlanta. DeLisi has her own channel at WDET.org. It's nothing his dad could have envisioned while he was following the Lone Ranger, Kernan says, but it's still called radio, the same way Honey Boo Boo is still called TV. Nothing is what it used to be, Jacob says, but radio will be something. That article came from the Detroit News.
The FCC doesn't want the boy who cried wolf to ruin the emergency alert system. This story appeared in Tom Taylor's Now magazine. Several strong cases taken up by the commission show it's determined to protect the public trust in EAS, even if somebody has to pay a $46,000 penalty, and even if a production company that sends programming to Sirius XM has to get a warning about an $8,000 fine if it screws up again. We've recently seen the agency lay a $25,000 penalty on Turner Broadcasting for a Conan O'Brien promo, and Max Media's WNKY-TV Bowling Green ordered to write a $39,000 check for emergency sounds and a spot. The latest offenses are by Pathfinder's Elkhart Area Talk, WTRC-FM in Niles, Michigan, which aired a spot for a storm-chasing tour that included EAS activation tones. Citizens called the National Weather Service and said, "This type of advertising is defeating and minimizing the importance of EAS activations." In compensation, Pathfinder is supposed to pay a $46,000 civil penalty. With the Stephanie Miller satellite radio show, the letter goes to SM Radio Productions in Weston, Connecticut. It's not beyond the reach of the commission, which originally queried Sirius XM, and then turned to the production house. The citation for misuse of EAS tones here is a cease and desist. The outside-produced spot it included in the Miller show contained less than a second and a half of the activation tone. The producer thought the tone was outdated, but even a second and a half can cause trouble at the FCC. And that's the lesson for everybody here. In Lexington, Kentucky, Chris Gay for the DX Audio Service.
Laid off from radio, but a voice for pride in her work. This story is by Neil Rubin in the Detroit News from December 11, 2014. The name tag uses only her first name and an initial, Dana M. But that and her voice were enough for a guest to fill in the blank. "You used to be on the radio," the woman said, and Dana London Masucci, formerly behind a microphone and currently behind the front desk at a Farmington Hills hotel, acknowledged that indeed she was. "I wondered where you went," the woman said. Sometimes Masucci wonders the same thing, but mostly she knows exactly where she is, the same place countless others have already been. As recently as March, Masucci was part of the morning team at WDVD-FM 96.3. A few months later, her fans were lining up to see her in the checkout lane at a Target where she was ringing up their purchases. Now she's working weekends and late shifts at the hotel, hired away by a customer at Target who liked her smile and her spirit. "What I'm going through," she says, "is nothing new to people who aren't in radio. What's different is the come down, or would be the come down if she saw it that way, which she refuses to do." At 17, working at McDonald's, Masucci won a national award for lobby cleaning. At WDVD, under the name Dana London, she was the traffic and weather reporter and third voice on the highly rated Blaine and Allison in the Morning. Life can change quickly. Effort and self-satisfaction shouldn't. Whether with a mop or a mic, she says, you have to take pride in what you do. And doing nothing is not an option. A childhood fascination. Masucci traces her roots in broadcasting to a radio her grandparents gave her when she was all of 6 years old. She would listen to the local stations in Connecticut and the faraway ones that came in late at night. But not just to the music. She took note of the disc jockeys' voices, the cadence, even the jingles. By 18, she was on the air, beginning a typical multi-state radio trek that brought her to Michigan in 1998 as the evening host at WKQI-FM 95.5. In a sometimes comically treacherous business, she has occasionally competed against herself. While one station airs a voice-track show starring Dana London, a sister station features Dana Masucci. Once, she replaced a midday host who was fired the morning of the station's Christmas celebration. She cried at the party. He didn't. There's a newspaper story online from 1991 where she says, "I'm sure I'll get fired someday. Everybody seems to." Stations change formats or program directors. Losses in one region lead to layoffs in another. Belts can tighten into nooses, and even popular programs like Blaine and Allison aren't immune. So a pink slip from the station was followed by a red shirt at Target and then a name tag at the hotel. Good things are coming. However steady Masucci's approach has been, the pay cut has been substantial. Her husband, Dan, is the production director for one of the radio chains in Detroit, but his was supposed to be the second income. Though they live modestly, she says, in a small house in Farmington Hills, she has sold her collection of Barbies and she's looking for a buyer for the gold and platinum records she was given at other stops where she was the program director. The listeners who connected with her on Facebook during better days sent her encouraging messages. Many of them are struggling more than she is, she says, so why should she complain? And who would she complain to? The other day she emptied an overflowing trash can at the breakfast buffet, and a guest tipped her $3. That afternoon she received a thank you note and a Starbucks gift card from a mother and daughter she had helped the week before. I'm going to take that as a sign from God that good things are coming, she says. Meantime, she'll just keep hustling and smiling as though they already had. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Phil Wayne in Harpster, Ohio.
Radio Disney has found a buyer for 1560 WQEW in the late Harold Camping's Family Radio. For $12.95 million, Family Radio programming will return to New York City for the first time since the organization sold 94.7 WFME Newark, New Jersey to Cumulus for $40 million. At the time of the sale, Family made its intent known that it wished to acquire an AM station in the market. Disney has operated WQEW since December 1998, when it began operating the station via LMA. It converted that lease to an outright purchase from the New York Times Company in 2007 for $40 million. I'm Wally Warrow in Dallas, Texas for the DX Audio Service.
Here's a story entitled, AM Band Needs Drastic Change. It was a letter to the editor written by Andrew Skotel in Radio World magazine on December 3, 2014. The author is licensee of 50 kilowatt AM stations KRKO and KKXA in the Seattle market. Opinions expressed are his own. All digital transmissions on the AM band are better than analog. However, all digital operation, if adopted, would only be a band-aid for the unstoppable rising tide of electromagnetic erosion that ultimately will wash away the coverage and signal improvements of digital. History weighs against achieving the consumer-receiver adoption levels necessary to realize the benefits of all digital ahead of this electromagnetic tide. Further, a majority of directional AM licensees will be unable to participate in its benefits for reasons unrelated to the technology. For those who seek a permanent solution, migrating occupants of the band to vacated VHF spectrum, TV spectrum, remains the only option anyone should consider truly permanent. Time is against us. In the 1920s, our station's signal, then at 250 watts, received daytime reception reports from Vancouver, British Columbia to Portland, Oregon. Today, we need 50,000 watts to reach 60 miles from our studios in Everett to listeners in Tacoma and Bellingham. Electromagnetic noise in the AM band is getting worse. In-car cell phone chargers, computers, LED lighting, and a host of other electronics interfere with the band and shrink coverage areas. Digital overcomes some of these issues for now, but how long will it last against an electromagnetic barrage that is indifferent to analog or digital on the AM band? The industry appears poised to forge ahead with AM digital, as opposed to VHF migration. So the next question becomes whether consumer adoption can occur quickly enough to realize the benefits. We tried to buy consumer tabletop AM/HD radio receivers ahead of our all-digital test broadcasts. None were available, not at Best Buy, not on Amazon, nor were any used radios available. Zero. And there has never been a portable HD radio-enabled AM receiver. No digital AM band receivers, let alone analog, will ever appear in cell phones because of chip interference and lack of real estate for an antenna. Meanwhile, in Seattle, receivers with HD radio technology of any kind represent only 5% of the market after 10 years of effort. Consider that for analog FM, consumer adoption and receiver penetration took nearly 5 decades. Given the current trajectory of HD radio-enabled receivers, and absent a digital receiver chipset mandate, or at least an FM digital transmission mandate that brings AM chipsets on its coattails, we likely would need 3 decades to achieve critical receiver mass, so AM stations could go all digital with a sufficient installed base of receivers. Directional issues. Further, even if 100% of Americans today had a radio with an HD radio chip, a mandated conversion to all digital on the AM band would be an immense burden on licensees of directional stations. Compared to non-directional stations, AM digital implementation on directional stations is far more costly depending on the age of the facilities and the number of radiating elements in the array. And digital implementation costs are asymmetrical from one directional facility to the next. For example, there are directional AM stations with short-spaced radiators that would have to relocate their radiators physically to make digital work. That's like building a new directional antenna from scratch. An awful proposition, as we learned. These issues are not insurmountable, but a mandated all-digital implementation could cause a significant number of directional licensees to turn their stations off when faced with the specter of investing to make their facilities ready to pass digital. What about an AM digital sunrise process in which all digital stations would operate on the band alongside analog signals, at least for some period of time? That would be a mixed bag at best. All digital is far more robust than current hybrid transmissions, but the sunrise scenario could make the band sound worse to listeners with analog-only radios and could hasten audience flight. All digital signals on the AM band sound like 1990s phone modem noise to analog radios. Remember the whoosh sound after the handshake? The sound is audible, many of us have heard it, in the sidebands of stations using the technology now. The benefits of stereo separation, better coverage, and signal consistency would be realized only by the small portion of the population capable of receiving the all-digital transmissions. A more elegant solution would be to use the next 4 decades to migrate occupants of the AM band to abandoned VHF spectrum, meaning current channels 2 to 6, and simplify the user experience. How might this work? The commission could require licensees to broadcast in digital on the FM band from the moment they turn on their new transmitters as the spectrum cost of migration. Stations would be allowed to simulcast their AM signals until some future day that the FCC retires the AM band. This would provide further incentive to receiver manufacturers to produce chipsets capable of receiving HD radio or digital radio mondial, and that's a topic for later discussion. FM analog sunset. If vacant VHF is off the table for licensees of the AM band, then we need to pursue the idea of an all-digital transition. And there are some ways to get AM stations to the all-digital altar. An analog sunset shot clock for the FM band is the fastest way to drive receiver manufacturer implementation and FM adoption. Digital technology works really well in the FM band and takes little to implement. How does this help AM stations? A mandate that all FM stations go digital would facilitate more rapid receiver deployment, presumably with mandated digital AM chipsets. This can set the stage for addressing the needs of the AM band. While the commission is at it, AM auction windows should be ended permanently. An all-digital mandate on the AM band could push a large number of directional operators, half or more, out of business, depending on the timing, because the bulk of AM stations in the U.S. are running with worn-out equipment and transmitter sites, and the revenue supporting those stations is too thin in many markets to justify new investment. The mandate would cull those who can't or won't make the upgrade, helping the transition. But while all digital on AM will make the band competitive, licensees shouldn't be forced into bankruptcy to do it. Incentives would be required. If we decide digital is the future of the band, we will need to craft a plan to push for significant tax incentives or other rewards for licensees who don't wish to go digital to turn in AM licenses. We can't bifurcate the AM band into digital and non-digital stations. Perhaps the incentive is some form of deferrable dollar-for-dollar reduction in tax payments, predicated upon the population of listeners within the daytime 1/10 millivolt per meter contour of a station, based on M3 conductivity multiplied by a cost per listener based on FM valuations. AM licensees would turn in their licenses for this kind of lucrative incentive. Licensees who turn in their licenses deserve meaningful compensation to exit. Licensed AM spectrum surrendered for tax incentives should never be used for radio again. When the surrender period is over, remaining stations should be allowed to improve their facilities by increasing power or moving where possible. And it's been suggested some kind of low-cost industry financing could be put in place to get the equipment out to stations and to facilitate upgrades. With these kinds of plans in place, and with national digital receiver penetration presumably by that time above 75%, an analog AM sunset could be implemented 20 to 30 years from now, and licensees could weigh which way they want to go, meaning they'd have a choice of migrating or taking the incentive to go silent. Frankly, if we got lucky and went from 4,700 AM stations down to 700 stations, the AM band and radio will be more sustainable. Sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? Getting to an all-digital AM band is crazy, and that's why we should advocate for migration and a digital mandate on the other end. Once you get FM spectrum for your AM, you should be required to implement HD. It can be HD the way it is now, with an analog main and digital HD1, but digital has to be baked in from the start. There is no doubt after our experiences here at the station with the testing that digital on AM is better than analog AM, for reasons you'll learn at the NAB show in April if you attend. But the question remains, how long will that advantage last? We'll continue our digital broadcasts because the warm sound quality, stereo separation, and consistency of the digital signal benefit our listeners who have HD radio-enabled receivers. But as an industry, we should only go there if we must, because a better, truly permanent solution is before us in migration. Then he asks, what do you think? Comment via email to RadioWorld, all one word, at nbmedia.com with letter to the editor in the subject field. And that article was written by Andrew Scottel. It's called AM Band Needs Drastic Change, and it appeared in the December 3rd, 2014 issue of Radio World. Needless to say, the opinions expressed are not necessarily those of NRC, its officers, or members. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Morning Man gets to buy the station in an all-seller paper deal. Now there's a headline you don't see too often. Billy Buck Blevins becomes a station owner with the $280,000 purchase of the stock of GHB Broadcasting's Statesville Family Radio Corporation in Statesville, North Carolina. That's in Piedmont, Carolina, 40 miles north of Charlotte. The station is Country Legends 550 AM and 92.7 FM WAME. Though for now, Blevins is getting just the AM station, not the translator. He'll lease translator W225BD at 92.9 from a GHB subsidiary, paying $1 a year plus costs. When he's finished paying off the $280,000 note, he has the option of buying the 250-watt translator for $10. As for WAME, it produces 500 watts daytime and 53 watts at night. A small station run by a big heart who loves radio. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Phil Wayne.
That's it for the DX Audio Service for January 2015. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. 73 and good DX.